Welcome to the Chelsea Skidmore Show. It's been a while, guys. So glad to be recording an episode. I haven't put something out since the beginning of January. And the reason for that is because I had started a new job in October, working in recovery as a sober companion. And I basically just, you know, needed to get a side job. I wanted to make some money and do something. I was sick of hanging out at home. And I had always heard of sober companion work. A friend of mine does it. And I would always run into her and be like, hey, I'm interested in doing that job. And basically just like timing just kind of caught up with the moment, whatever the fuck. What does that even mean? Timing caught up with the moment. I was going to say right place, right time, but I made up a phrase instead that makes no sense. I ran into my friend and I was like, what's up with the sober companion job? And the moment was right is what I think I was going for. And I started working, and it's been an amazing experience. I know I've talked about it on some of my other episodes, but that's what I've been busy doing. And, you know, it's been hard to find balance in my life, to be honest, because the job that I assumed was just going to be a couple of times a month in and out had become what felt like more of a full-time job. I mean, sometimes, you know, one of my weeks recently were like 70 hours, and that's because I'm doing 24/7 shifts when I'm companioning, but it's a lot and it's taken over my life in a lot of ways. And I just was not able to podcast and I needed a break too. So, thank you for your patience. If you enjoy the podcast, and I have a bunch of episodes coming for the month of March. So thank you for tuning in, and I'm really excited for today's episode. So my guest today is Allie Severino, and she is in a documentary called American Relapse, which I happened to see while I was working with a client, and it was really an incredible documentary. I saw it on Amazon Prime. She also has a series on Vice called Dope Sick Nation. And it basically tracks her and her coworker, Frankie, as they work in recovery in Florida and try to get people into treatment facilities. But, you know, it's great. They really just like go behind the scenes. It's a real good look, you know, behind the curtain and kind of to see what it's like. I mean, they work with a lot of people off the street. So it's gritty, it's exciting, it's wild, and it's sad too. It's really, really sad and very eye-opening, especially about this business that I'm just kind of getting into. And, you know, it's not to say I'm just going to be doing this. Like, I'm still going to be doing stand-up. I'm still writing. The other thing I've been doing for the past couple months is I'm still working on this feature that I've been working on since July. And I've rewritten it a ton of times, but I just want to get it into a great place. And so I've just been working and writing, and I'm so excited again to give you guys this episode. I really enjoy talking to her. She has a crazy life and I think you guys will enjoy it too. So have a good day. Subscribe, rate, and review, and send me a message on Instagram and tell me what you thought of the episode. Okay. Bye. Enjoy. Hi, Allie. I'm here with Allie Severino. Allie is someone that I saw on the documentary American Relapse. Allie, you work in recovery.
I do.
I should just let you introduce yourself because it's always awkward when I try to.
Oh, this is awkward. Okay. So, all right. My name's Allie Severino. Yes, I work in treatment. I've worked in treatment for about 10 years now. It's good. I've worked in treatment for about 10 years now. I started off with a sober magazine and I moved on to a sober living house. And a little bit after that is when I filmed American Relapse, the film, and then Dope Sick Nation, our show, which was on Viceland. And Yeah. And now here I am today. I did my recovery coaching trainings today and I started a job with the city of West Palm Beach on Monday. So making it happen.
So how did the documentary come about? And then I know that there's like so many different areas to cover, which is like also like leading up to sobriety and the stuff that came along with it. But now let's just start with the documentary.
Yeah. So when I moved down to West Boca when I was like 13, 14 years old, went to West Boca High, totally different than what I'm used to. And this kid, Jamie, was in my journalism classes, which were my favorite. And we used to just riff all class and years went by. I never heard from him. And he called me one day and he said, "Hey, Allie, like, I know you work in the industry, whatever. Can you tell me about like this patient brokering thing that's going on? I want to make a movie or a show about it." And he was like talking to this guy who I was like, "Bro, you cannot make this with this guy. Like, he is the guy you're making the show about, right?" And so he was like, "Dude, tell me all about it." And we spent probably 2 hours on the phone. And he was like, "Okay, well, I'm going to pitch this idea. And I'm going to come down with my brother and maybe we can like shoot something." Okay, sure. Like, I was just like, "Yeah, whatever you want. Like, let me know." And probably a couple months went by and he came down, "Hey, we're going to be in Boca this weekend. Can we follow you around?" "All right, sure. You know, yeah, let's do it." And when they were here, they were like, "Holy shit, this is fucking crazy." Right? Because this was like at the height of patient brokering South Florida. Like,
so explain what that is, because when I was watching the documentary, I didn't even know that that existed. Like the idea of like body hunters, junkie, what is it called? Junkie body hunters or whatever.
Body broker, junkie hunters. Yeah.
Yeah. I never even heard of that before. Like, so I live in LA and LA, like, you know, is like a recovery mecca as well. I think probably Florida and LA are like the biggest industries for recovery. And, you know, as far as I knew, like people just went to rehab and like, you know, a bunch of rich kids, their parents put them in there for 30 days and then they're done. But, and I had heard about like, I know there's like a big scummy side of like the recovery industry. And I only just started working in recovery in October. So like, there's so much
there's so much
that like I'm seeing that like is like crazy. Like that I didn't realize like just be, like I never went to rehab. I just went to AA. Like that's how I got sober. I wasn't like really fluent in like what goes on in recovery and that there's a lot of places that like aren't good.
Yeah, a lot.
Yeah. So maybe I'll just let you kind of explain that whole world because it's so fascinating to me.
Right. So what happened was back in the day, you could only go to treatment once a year. That's what some insurances would cover if they covered it at all. They wouldn't pay for it over and over again, right? And when Obamacare passed, they made it so they had to continue covering mental and behavioral health care. It became like one of the seven necessities of a healthcare plan that needed to be on it. So after the Affordable Care Act went in, it was like, it blew up. Now a patient could go to treatment as many times as they needed to get better. So obviously people took advantage of this. And the kids that I have met down here who have been to 20 plus rehabs in a year, or, you know, like so many over their lifetime. It's just unbelievable. And so what started happening is that every rehab center has a marketing department. That marketing department is in charge of producing all the revenue for the rehab center. And so if you have a client whose insurance pays out 100% after their deductible and, the facility's making however much, 30 grand off of it, they're going to give you 3 grand for bringing them in, 5 grand.
Okay, and that's the kickback that they'll give the patient brokers?
Right.
Or, okay.
Okay, so now that patient broker was able to All right, I'll get there. Ready? So then a lot of those patient brokers were then breaking off their clients, right? So maybe you're not making any money. Maybe you don't have any intakes coming in. So like, hey kid, like I'm going to give you some money, get high. I'll also give you $500 if you finish 2 weeks of PHP. Boom, done, right? You got a client in, you just made $3,000. Okay. And so then what they started doing, opening sober living houses. So I have all my clients, they're in a sober living house. They're not going to leave me. They're here. They relapse. They go back. I get paid. They come back. I get paid for every urine test.
And that was the whole golden whatever. What was that again? The whole thing with the piss test.
Oh yeah. They're like, what do they call it? I can't remember right now, but it was like, it was a lot of money because they're making like $1,000 or more than $1,000 a piss test.
Yeah. You know? So it's like every time they do a drug test, that's like $1,000 to $3,000 per piss test. So that means they're just billing your insurance. So, and then people were giving, people in the facilities were giving the clients drugs to keep them in there and like keep the cycle going. That's so fucking crazy.
I know. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And then,
and, you know, so
with the sober living too, it's like the flop houses, like it's like every kind of step along the way encourages that behavior.
Yeah. And I think like when we were starting to film the movie, that's kind of like where they were like, holy shit. Cause I was like, dude, watch this. The guy, his name's Kenny Chapman. They did a whole like greed on him. They just came out with a movie, Patient Body Brokers.
I saw that. Was that based?
I haven't watched
him?
It yet.
I haven't watched it either. I'm going to though.
But I feel like it is right. Like when I was watching, I was like, that looks like Kenny Chapman, right? Maybe they're trying to like do a little thing. But so, he had a bunch of sober livings, and one time I got a phone call, okay, from a girl. She wanted to go somewhere, whatever. We went to go pick her up. Two more girls ran out, and they're like, just put us in the car, take us wherever you want. Like, they won't let us go. They took our cell phones. They're in contact with our parents. They're lying to our parents about what we're doing. Like, they were literally, like, trapped there. Like,
they wouldn't
crazy.
Let them leave?
No. Like, they would not. They had girls chained to beds, like, getting like literally raped all day, like having Johns come in. It was awful what they were doing. And so they had these sober living set up, and I wanted to show the crew, like, this is what the fuck is going on around here. I walk down the street. They think I'm a patient, and they're like, hey, da 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 da. Like they start talking to me. I have a mic on. Okay. They literally bring me inside. Cause I'm like, yeah, I have insurance. Cause I just wanted them to see how they would treat me once I said I had insurance.
Investigative like, journalism.
Right. And then I was like in the thick of it. I was like, holy shit, get me the fuck out of here. Right. Like, oh my God, I'm totally going to get caught. And like, they were like, wow, we have to make this happen. Cause this is crazy.
And why is in like South Florida particularly, right? So is that something about like the state laws or that makes Florida like so susceptible to this or the districts?
I think Florida now is nothing like it was then.
What year was this kind of going on? Like early 2000s?
Like 2010, 11, 12. 13, 14, you know, those years got bad. 12, 13, 14, 15. I think 16 is when they passed reform. 16 or 17, they passed reform. So after that happened, you could no longer own a sober living house. A rehab center couldn't send their patients to a sober living that's not FAR accredited. You know, you can own a sober living house, but if you're not FAR accredited, you can't work with treatment centers. Treatment centers aren't allowed to own their own sober livings. They broke it all up, you know, and they arrested a ton of people. And now we have multiple watchdog groups, a ton of oversight, sober home task force. So they really cleaned it up, and about 1,000 places went out of business probably that first year.
Wow.
And a lot of them moved to California, like a lot of the people, because in Cali, I think that they're making some changes, but out there, from what I know, you can have a place that has 6 beds and you can just open them up fast. And the reimbursements are super high because their reimbursements dropped for Florida because of the fraud. Right. But in California or Texas or Washington on the West Coast, there's so whatever, people are doing it other areas, but Florida's gotten cleaned up a lot. Thank God. Cause, it was just a recovery capital. There's just so many rehab centers here that I think that's what made it.
Yeah.
And you're dealing with a bunch
of
drug addicts.
And also, like, following the opioid epidemic, which
the
was...
The pill mills down here.
Yeah. Is that still going... Like, what does that still look like in Florida? Is that still as crazy as it was, or has it like gotten controlled a little bit?
No, that's what Florida does. We're the best state in the whole country. Okay, we come in, we fuck shit up, we like blow it up. All right, we make a good thing, and we ruin it, and then they shut it down, and it's over. You know, like when I was younger, that's how I got on drugs, because there was a pill mill on every corner. They were so cheap, and like I had one right by my house. It was called like. So it had like a little B on the door, whatever. But you would see license plates from everywhere. West Virginia, Tennessee, Kentucky, Georgia, because they were all coming here to get their pills.
Yeah. And what was the process like when you walked into a pill mill? Like you just paid them a little extra and you can get whatever you wanted, or?
Well, you had to pay in cash, right? Mm-hmm. And so some of them, what you always needed was like a MRI or x-ray or whatever, showing that you had something wrong with you, right? Uh-huh. Like, oh, I have a thing on my neck or this whatever hurts, da da da. So they had people that would do those for you, right? Make them up for you. So, and you would just bring them in. And, you know, like forge them. And you just bring them in, you wait in line, you see the doctor, they go, yep. Okay, 90 Xanax, 180 Roxy 30s, and however many Oxy 80s, here you go, bye. You pay there. A lot of them filled the prescriptions there. They actually just gave you the drugs. And back then, the pharmacies weren't linked up together. So for me, I was doctor shopping before I got arrested. So I went to 12 doctors a month, and I had to go to 12 different pharmacies a month. And that was the deal. Now all the pharmacies are connected. If you go to Publix one day and Walgreens the next, you're going to get caught and you're going to
get arrested. And they flag you. I never like got into pills. I was more of a coke person, so like there's a lot I don't know about all that kind of stuff.
I get it. I was too, until like Florida was just, they were just, everyone was doing them. The quarterback of my high school, like, it was like we didn't know that they were super addicting and like heroin. Like, it was like, oh, hillbilly heroin. You know, now like half of us are dead, so it was crazy.
And what's the difference between like a body hunter, a junkie? What's, I keep forgetting the word junkie.
Junkie hunter, body
junkie
broker.
Junkie hunter, body broker. I love those. It's so interesting. And patient brokering. Like, is there a slight difference
it's
between
the
them?
Same.
Or it's all the same?
No, it's all the same. Yeah. Anything that you're getting a paid a kickback for a person is illegal. You know, like, you cannot do that.
Does that still exist today?
Yeah, I just, most of them are in areas like California. California pays a lot. Right now, if you're a body broker in California, you're making $5,000 in admit.
Wow.
Super, a lot of money. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's funny. I took like my work had me do like a training course, and we were going over ethics, and there were like, if a treatment facility like offers you like tickets to like a football game, or like, do you take it? Yes or no? And I was like, or like, do you accept gifts or money? Like, for getting a patient in there. And I was like, huh? Like, I'm so like naive. Like, I was like, no, but like, I didn't even know that that was like a thing. It just, I don't know. It's funny. It's like, I didn't realize how much integrity I had with all this stuff. Like, obviously I can't like say too much specifically, but like a situation happened where like I saw a facility lying to like a patient's family, and it like, I just feel, I feel like that's like the most I can really say on it. But like, it just like, it bothered me so much. Like, and I got so fucking like upset, and like, I was like, I have to like save this person. Like, I'm really trying to find the balance of like, you know, I can't do more work than my client, and that, like all of that. And like, I feel like I care like too much, you know, like I care so much about like helping people get sober, but I realize that like, a lot of, they're not even like, half the time they're not even there. Like, how do you deal with that? Or like, what has your journey like that been?
Honestly, it's letting go of the outcome, you know? And I think, unfortunately, I think I, at some point, got a little desensitized. If somebody's, you know, with me for a long time, then of course I care a lot. Or if they're like a really good friend, you know, but I do my best job I can possibly do for someone and they have to do the rest, right? Like I was sent to like some shitty nonprofit state funded rehab that was like the worst. Okay. My therapist was literally on Hoarders, an episode of Hoarders Buried Alive. I'm not kidding.
You're
okay.
The that's therapist the lady. From there? That's
yes,
so funny.
That's the lady that's like my therapist in there. Okay. And I'm like, sucks, right?
That's so funny.
And I still made it. So these kids have no excuse, right? Like they got to do the work. And I've also let go of like, what is them failing? You know, is it failing for me? You know, is it what I don't think is right for them?
Fuck.
They should be able to live their authentic recovery life and their own journey. Like my job is to just small steps help you get somewhere better than where you're at.
Yeah, I think for me, like I may be trying to do a good job, but that is more selfish then because it's like coming from that. I never really thought about that because I'm like, I want to do a good job. Like I want to be the one who like saves this. I mean, I'm in Al-Anon. It's not working yet. I mean, but yeah, it's definitely like super eye-opening and it teaches you a lot about yourself too.
Yeah. I've learned, you know, the biggest struggle I've had in recovery was like the most stressful time of my life is when we were filming for the show, right? So we filmed for the movie. That was like a weekend. It wasn't like a big deal, right? I hate my hair in it, whatever. But if you watch the movie,
you had dyed. I loved it underneath.
It was so hard to get out. And look, I accidentally cut all my hair off the other day. Whatever.
I love it.
No big deal. Thanks. Not my favorite, but thank you. I appreciate it. I'm working with it. So, so if you saw the movie, you saw that my boyfriend at the time had relapsed.
Yes.
When we did the show, I was like, Blair, you have to like figure this out, right? Like I'm about to be so fucking busy. Like I don't have the time for you crashed your car. You ran out of gas, the methadone clinic, da, 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 da. Like I can't do it anymore, dude. I'm going to have a mental breakdown. And of course he couldn't, right? I shouldn't have ever been able to expect him to, but I couldn't really move out right then either. Mm-hmm. Like it was like, they were here and I had no idea the work that goes into making a TV show, right? And like the pressure. So he's getting high the entire time I'm filming. I'm at work all day with people that are getting high. My co-host Frankie is getting high. And I was just like, I'm going to lose it. Like it was like I couldn't get away for a minute. And I like, so when that was over, I took a step back, you know? And started helping different people, homeless, mental health, and I feel like that's helped me just like center again. Because for a minute I was like, I don't care anymore.
Like, yeah. I mean, it's a lot. It takes such a toll. Like I really felt for you when you were crying, you know, in American Relapse and you were just like super exhausted. And I watched this with a client of mine at the rehab she was at when I was companioning. It was her second time seeing it and she loved the documentary. And I love that she wanted to watch it too, you know?
Yeah.
But like, I really just like, I like totally got it, you know, because this job is so exhausting and draining and like, yes, it's very rewarding too, but like finding that balance is so important. Like, or else you're just gonna fucking like I totally, I think it was you who was like your friend who passed.
Kelly. Yeah.
When she was like, what are you doing that I'm not? Like, I feel like I've had that conversation with some of my friends before because it's like, yeah, I'm going to meetings. I'm doing the work. And people were like, oh, is that it? It's like, how many times can I have this conversation? Like, you know what it is.
Right.
But people don't want to do the work.
Right. Or the work isn't, you know what I learned? It's like, and I've been doing all these classes, and I've always been open to harm reduction, right? I really love harm reduction and stuff like that. But we did this thing in class, and they were like, you know, how do we start our addiction, right? It's like we start off our life abstinent, not using anything, at whatever age, right? I was 9 when I smoked pot for the first time. Before that, I was abstinent. And then I experimented, right? And then I started using, smoking pot, drinking socially. And then it became regularly. Then I came like addicted, and then unmanageability, out of control addiction, right? And that was a process. And we expect people to go from here right to here in a day. We want them in a day to go, okay, you're in detox now. You're done. You're sober. You're done. Say goodbye. That fucking shit's over. You know, you're ruining your life. And they're like, but what? Like, it's a lot. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, slow baby steps. That's my new thing. Slow baby steps. Let go of the outcome. Let's just make you a little better than yesterday, whether that's you were smoking meth and now you're smoking pot. I'm fucking proud of you. You're doing a great job, you know, and I want to be there for every person like that who feels shut out from like regular 12-step meetings and all that stuff. Like, they're not really accepted there. And I want them to know, like, you are loved and you are doing a fucking great job. Like, keep going. Because I think that's the majority of people.
Yeah. It was so heartbreaking to see at the end of the doc, like, where everyone was at.
I know.
Yeah. Whatever happened to that couple who was on the street?
Okay, so Kenny's doing really good right now. He is back with his daughter, but that happened because I think they were married. Tabitha passed away maybe a year or two ago. They were homeless for some time, and she got an infection, and she didn't make it through the surgery or something of that nature. So she passed away. And he finally got off the
That story was really heartbreaking because I saw that he was done, but I think like the codependence, you know, made it hard for him to leave her.
For sure.
But it was so sad to see that, like, even when she was given the opportunity, that she couldn't take it.
Yeah. And how do you leave like your best friend out there?
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I get it. So sad though.
Yeah.
And to think, like, they had a daughter and they were brokered down here.
I didn't
know
they had a daughter.
Story. They had a daughter at home in Ohio, and they were brokered down to Florida, went to rehab, da, da, da. Insurance ran out, homeless.
Oh.
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Mm-hmm.
So when you guys go around, like, explain how it kind of works, like how you find people, like, do you get tips? Like, do you just kind of drive around and see people?
So my phone rings organically, right? Like, I'm from here. I told you, like, went to high school and everything here. A lot of people are not from here. Right. So I get people from, I grew up with, call, or parents know me, they call, you know. I think when you're out in the community a lot, people just start to know what you do. They know you work in recovery. And when they are faced with something like this, they don't know who to talk to. They don't want to talk to their family sometimes, or their closest friends. So they'll reach out. When I do like a lot of homeless outreach, and I just go, like, for instance, this is my favorite time I did homeless outreach. They were playing Baby Shark at fucking 5 o'clock in the morning to clean the park out off a helicopter.
That's so funny.
Yeah, they're trying to get. So I went and gave everybody little like earplugs. Like, that was my favorite day, right? So, but I go out there and talk to them, and you know, you start seeing the same faces over and over again. Yet they want a dollar, or they want a candy bar, or whatever. Some of them you get closer with, and you know that they're on the brink of wanting some help. You know, and so I'll just keep going, keep planting seeds until they're ready. And then when someone comes to me and they're ready, I'll do whatever I can to try and give them a shot somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I didn't see the series. I don't know where to watch that. Cause I don't have like do you have to have the Vice app?
Yeah, it's on Vice. I think it's on Hulu, or no, it's on YouTube.
Okay, cool.
Maybe like Apple. Yeah, definitely on YouTube for sure.
Do you know, did Frankie go to rehab in LA like 7 years ago? Because I feel like I've met him.
He might have.
He looks so fucking familiar. And I feel like, yeah. And I was like, I know him. Did he, or do you know if he lived in LA?
He was definitely out in the West Coast for a little bit. I know that he was on the West Coast for a little bit. I'm not sure where or how long. He's a little bit older. He's had quite a life. But yeah, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I can ask his mom though for you.
Yeah, I'm like, I'm pretty sure I met him. I think my friend went to rehab with him. And I remember... because every met like instantly when I saw him, I was like, I know him, but I couldn't like place how. Anyways, okay, so let's backtrack and kind of start. I want to hear about your story before you were sober and your whole journey, because I know it was super interesting. And you can just take it in any direction you want to go. Any fun stories along the way?
All right, so yeah, I had two parents who. I think I just got their genetics, right? My dad used to put me to bed at night. My dad raised me, right? And I remember like I was super little and he was like saying goodnight. And he used to tell me like, now, Ellie, you want to be careful, right? And I was like, what? He's like, you have things passed on from me and your mom and you could be a bad person. And I'm like, what the fuck are you talking about, right? And he is basically telling me like, kid, if you drink or drug, like you could be super fucked up and it might not like jive with your body. Right. Like,
yeah,
you know, he was basically trying to tell me like, hey, like be careful, you know? And I guess I got it, but I was always thought, well, I'm never going to drink because that's what both my parents do. They drink. So I was like, I would never, like, I hate it with a passion. Mm-hmm. And so I got older and I just did drugs. And I think that's like a lot of people's story. Right. Mm-hmm. So nine, I smoked pot with my friend. I like didn't know what I was doing. I was like, oh, what do I do? She's like, just suck in. It was a bong, right? I was like, cool. Like the bubbles, like that's how young I was. And I was like, ha ha, make some noise. Like get stoned, right? And yeah, that's when it all started. And I was a good kid. I was a bad kid. Then I was a good kid. I guess it just depended on the parenting I was receiving at the time. And I went to sleepaway camp. I came home and my dad had relapsed. He had some time sober, like 5 years, and he was drinking again. And I think when that happened, I was like, well, fuck it. I don't care anymore. Like I'll do whatever I want to do too. Mm. And yeah, so I moved down to Florida. Before I moved to Florida, the only drugs I'd ever, I'd smoked some Freebase at the ripe age of, I don't know, 12 or 13. I didn't, and I told my friend, I'm like, this is crack. They're like, it's Freebase. I'm like, this shit's crack, guys. Like, you know, we're little kids. And, you know, pot, did ecstasy. But I had never even heard of prescription painkillers or any prescription drugs. I moved down to Florida. My first week in high school in Florida, they were like, hey, do you have any French fries? I'm like, what? They're like, Xanax, dude. I was like, what? Like, I didn't know what any of this was. They're like, yeah. And I met this kid like in the middle of the night who lived in my neighborhood. And he was like, hey, do you want to go to a party? And I was like going through a breakup, like a high school breakup. And I was like, yeah. Okay. And he was like, oh, really? I was like, yeah, sure. And he goes, well, it's not really a party. I'm just kind of smoke a pot at my house. I was like, perfect. Let's do it. Right. That's even better. And so we do that. He gave me my first Xanax and he like gave me two and I didn't realize how strong they were. The next day I get to school. I'm late. They put me in this tardy room, which is just like, what a stupid concept, right? You have to sit there the entire 2 hours of your class. And I remember he was like, you can either, eat it or like sniff it. And I was like, okay. So I like sniffed one and I literally chewed and ate the other one. I don't know why I chewed it. It was disgusting. And I was fucking wasted. I don't remember anything. Mm-hmm. I remember getting woken up throughout the day, shuffling from classes. I got in some trouble, super belligerent. And that started the next 2 years of just being like that. I really don't remember it too much. My friends call me Bernie from Weekend at Bernie's.
Yeah. That's such a funny nickname.
That became my nickname because that's how I looked all the time. And my big goal was to be a drug dealer. Like, I was like, I want to be a drug dealer. Like, this is the life for me, right? Mm. Like, money and drugs. Like, this is great.
Yeah.
And so my best friend at the time, he goes, I want to work at an animal hospital and I want to steal all the ketamine. Yes. I was like, fuck yeah, dude, right? So like a year or maybe less goes by and I'm selling drugs and he's robbing every animal hospital of their ketamine. Right? We're like, wow. We did it. And it's because his mom taught us about, like, I don't know, the power of positive thinking or the secret or some shit like that. Yeah. She like talked about the secret, right? And so we were like, all right, dude, this is what we got to do. Before we get up out of bed every day, we have to envision ourselves getting high, getting money. And this was like a thing we
manifesting
did, right?
Manifesting, like, it. That's amazing.
Bro, that's when I started manifesting, was when I was getting high. And I believed so in it with funny. My whole body, right?
Yeah. And adding the emotion, you know?
Yeah. It's crazy. So, so I was doing that. He was doing that. And then eventually it all came to a head when before I was selling ecstasy, and I would go to this rave club down here and sell it basically on the weekends. There's another guy who sold it too. And my friend had told me, like, hey, like, this kid said that his connect dried up. Like, would you meet with him? And I was like, all right. Yeah. And I'm like thinking, like, fuck this kid, right? Like, I'm giving him all fake shit. Like, fuck this kid. And so the girl was supposed to, like, introduce us. She got in a car accident. I was like, I'm meeting him anyway because I need this money. Who's paying? He was way overpaying for the ex. And I was like, that's a little weird, but whatever. Fuck this kid, right? And I meet with him. I sell it to him. Me and my boyfriend at the time, we leave. And we're like, oh, my God, we didn't get shot. Thank God. Because we sold him 100 pills and, like, almost 50 of them were Tylenol or multivitamins.
Oh,
right?
I was going to ask what they were. Yeah.
Yeah. Multivitamins were really good because they had, like, different specky colors in them. Yeah. So I really liked using those. Anyway, the guy calls us back and he was like, hey, they were great. Can I get more? And I'm like, that's really weird. Like, don't you think that's weird, right? Like, is he going to fucking kill us the next time we go meet with him? And my boyfriend's like, well, you know, he just wanted to make money. So, and at this time we are sponsoring, before it meant what it does mean to me today, we are sponsoring this older guy, BGM. That was his AOL acronym. He went by Big Game Mike. So, we were sponsoring him to go to all the doctors throughout the month. So
what do you
those
mean
the
sponsoring him?
So we paid for the doctor visit and the pills to be filled.
Yeah. Yeah. You know? You're like, you go as a cover or like someone to go do it for you. Like we'll pay you.
Old
to
enough.
Go. Yeah. 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 Okay.
You know, so he had to go and we would pay for everything. And then we would get the pills at the end of the day and we would sell them.
Yeah.
Right, and use them, you know? That was our main gig, but we were still fucking with this guy on the side with this ecstasy, which was so retarded, right? So anyway, we did it 3 times. I was like, that's the last time. He wanted to buy 1,000, right? I'm like, that's crazy. Yeah. Who would buy 1,000 multivitamins to my boyfriend? Like, this is not right. Like, something's going on.
Yeah. And by that point, were you giving more fake ones than real ones? Because he's just can't tell the
probably
difference.
Yeah. I can't remember like the ratio, but knowing me, yeah, yeah, right. Like there was always some real ones in there, but not enough to think you're getting a good buy, right? Like if you're selling, customers are pissed. They're not feeling anything.
Totally.
So we stop answering. I say, dude, do not answer this kid anymore. It's weird. He wants to meet our guy. Like it's getting super weird. Mm-hmm. Okay, fine. So he's blowing us up. Like he's calling us 5 times a day, nonstop. Finally answer. We're like, dude, we don't have any more ecstasy. Like, what do you have? We're like, well, we have oxys and roxys and Xanax. And he goes, okay, I'll take all three. Okay. Now at this time, I'm done, right? Like our guy that we're sponsoring, the main
drug guy. He moves in with us. He takes over the bedroom. He's like having like young kids like suck his dick and shit. Shit was getting super weird in that house. We fucking robbed our neighbor. Like there used to be this shit called oxydose, and it was like you put it under your tongue. It was like a liquid oxy. So we sold it, the bottle, but it had soapy water in it. Someone shot it up. They were fucking pissed, right? Like
they shot up soapy water.
Dude, yeah, I know. I'm a bad person. I like didn't.
Did anything happen?
No, they were fine. They looked bad though. Matt was like, dude, I stole the kid's lighter. I want to go return it. Come over there with me. I'm like, you stole his lighter? Like this kid's like doing this thing. He could die, right? For all we know.
Wait, and you said you robbed someone?
Well, we robbed a lot of people.
I'm not judging. I want to hear what it's like.
Well, yeah. So we ripped that guy off for the oxy.
I
want to
watch
this
movie. I want to watch this movie right now.
There's a lot going on. And this old drug dealer had like moved. He had gotten out of prison and he had moved back into the neighborhood we were living in. Mm-hmm. By the way, when I got with this guy, he like, I had a crush on him forever. We like hooked up for a little bit and then like we stopped and then we did. And then he had a girlfriend. He was doing really good with his life. She was like a great like influence on him. She worked hard, was in college, whatever. He came to my window one day, was like, hey, you want to get high? And I was like, yeah. And then I was like on a rampage. So I kicked her out of her own house. I slit her tires. I stole her ferret. So this girl's out for fucking blood, right? So she's been calling the fucking landlord. She's been calling the landlord like every week trying to get
it. Stole her ferret.
Oh my God. I had so Officer Hennessy trying to get this ferret back from me. It all comes full circle. So whatever. She's making our life a living hell. She's trying to get us evicted. They don't want us there anyway. A drug dealer that used to live there but went to prison, got out of prison and was back living in our neighborhood, and he was very upset that we weren't even there and that we sold his friend fake drugs. Our guy that's living with us is having juveniles suck his dick for pills, right? It's bad. So I'm like, man, we gotta get the fuck out of here, right? Like we can't, we fucked this place up too badly. Like our house is surrounded at night with people with like knives and shit. Like they're trying to fucking kill us.
Wow.
And I'm like, holy shit. So I pack my stuff up. I bring it back to my dad's and we're about to dip out on everybody, right? We stole the last of the rent money. We didn't pay the rent. FPL's getting shut off. Like we're fucked, super fucked in about a couple days. We go to do our last deal. We take the guy to the doctor. We get the pills. We're doing our last deal and everything.
It's always the last one, you know?
It's always the last one. It's greed that gets everybody fucked up.
Yes.
Every time. So we go, we have some Denny's and, you know, we're eating Denny's, we're smashing pills on the table. Like, you know, just blatant, arrogant, ignorant assholes. Right. And we go to meet this guy at the movie theater. And I jump in the car. I'm doing math on my phone. Cause I'm like, you're buying a bunch of shit that's like different prices and stuff. Like, I don't even know how much you owe me. And then it's like, put your hands in the air. And I'm like, whoa. And I like look up and they are like ski masks, guns, organized crime task force, like everywhere. Like there are so many fucking cops with guns out. And I'm like, holy shit. I threw my drugs in the front seat to try to set up the narc, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh my God. And they ripped me out of the car. And I was like, this is fucking stupid. No way I'm going to jail. Like, not me, not today. Like, this has to be a joke. This has to be, they have to have the wrong person, right? Or something weird. And no, they didn't. They had me. It was me. And I'm in the police car, right? When they finally take me away, I'm like, does this mean I can't be a police officer anymore? I'm like trying to kiss ass at the wrong time. And they finally found out I was only 17 and they were like, oh my God. It was like I had just ruined like their whole thing. They were like, Jesus Christ, we've been doing this for a juvenile this whole time. Like, this is crazy. they want to call my dad. I'm like, my parents are dead. You're not contacting anyone. They're like, we need to call your family. Give us a phone number. Finally at 3 a.m. I get delivered to the juvenile. Like it was like a waiting center before you go to the detention center. Officer Hennessy, the lady who had been tracking me down about that fucking ferret, was there chaining me up. And I was like, oh my God, Officer yeah. Hennessy, it's me. Come call me about the ferret, right? She's like, bitch. Oh my gosh. So yeah, that was a big day.
And so everything. The guy who was getting all of those pills from you, the fake pills, was undercover.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he got caught doing something and he, you know, went undercover to get himself out of trouble.
Yeah. So then what happened from there? Was this that big arrest that with the
yeah,
sentencing?
Yeah, that was a big arrest. Okay. Yeah, so I was facing 120 years in prison. Originally, I was in...
What was like the process of finding that out? Like, so you're in the detention center and then you go to a hearing and then they tell you 120 years.
Yeah.
Like, what did it feel like? Did you expect that much time? Like, what did it feel like when you,
no.
What is that like when you're standing there and you hear that number? Like, do you feel like you're going to like pass out? Like, what is that experience like?
I was just like, really, I remember thinking is like, no one ever told me you would get so much trouble for this. Like, I genuinely never thought I would get in so much trouble for selling drugs, like mm-hmm. 120 years. And I remember like the one thing that stood out to me and when I knew I was fucked, when I was like, I'm in school, like I need to go back to high school. Like I got mm-hmm. school starts again in like a month or whatever. This was like over the summer. They're like, the judge is like, honey, school is the least of your concerns right now. And I was like, oh shit. Like mm-hmm. no one had ever, school is the number one thing you're concerned about as a kid. That is your only responsibility. Mm-hmm. And when I was like, man, they don't even care. Like I'm kind of fucked. Mm-hmm. And then my public defender I had told my dad, like, well, maybe she'd be better off in jail. Cause my dad's like, she's doing great. She looks good. She gained weight. Da da da. And she was like, well, good. Maybe she should stay. And he was like, yeah, anyway, we're getting a real lawyer. Like,
yeah.
What? So yeah, I was just kind of shocked. I was super quiet, but I don't think I emotionally react too much because I was detoxing really badly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so my first month there, I was super sick. I only missed my boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
And I was just kind of going with it every day. Like, fuck, I could be here for a long time. Like,
so is this juvie or jail?
Yeah. So I was in the juvenile detention center, which is 10 times worse than jail.
Really?
And, oh my God, dude. Oh my God. It's a nightmare. They should shut that fucking place down. It was so bad.
What was it like?
It was like the worst place you've ever been to in your life. So, and I was like one of the only white people in there and mm-hmm. the guards like hated me, right? Like they hated me. You have to wake up at like 6 o'clock in the morning, maybe earlier. Yet when you eat, you have to sit there. You're not allowed to talk to anybody. You're not allowed to share food. It's very strict. I remember I got 3 minutes to shower and I was like, dude, I'm like washing the shit out of my hair. They're like, you're done. Pulled me out, shampoo still in my hair. Like, you're done. It's over, you know? And I was like, this is fucking crazy. You have to go to school all day. You're not allowed to sleep at all. You have to like sit in the most uncomfortable chairs. There's kids there that are like 7 years old. These kids are like maniacs.
Seven?
Okay? Yeah.
Because they like killed someone.
17. No, they did something, you know, because like kids in poorer areas are getting in way more trouble for dumb shit, mm-hmm. right? So they, you know, this one girl, she threw some kind of metal out the window and it like hit somebody. I don't know. She was in a bunch of trouble. And this other girl came in. I think she was like Russian or some shit. She stabbed her boyfriend in the heart. She was out the next day. Okay.
What?
Like, yeah. I was like, what? Cause she was in my cell, like, bitch, you're never getting out of here. Like, yeah, right. Dude, you stabbed your boyfriend in the heart, right? He was fine. I guess he was in the hospital, but he didn't die for hitting your beamer. You're never leaving. out yeah. the next day.
So since you were 17, I'm assuming you were probably like the oldest, because probably once you turn 18, you go to jail, right?
Yeah. And then I got direct filed after a month. So I was sentenced as an, or I was charged as an adult.
Okay.
And then I did go to the adult jail. So I got transferred.
How long were you in jail for? Is it jail or prison?
Altogether. Jail.
Okay.
Yeah. County
jail. I don't even know what the difference between jail and prison.
Prison's much better.
I was arrested when I was 16, but like it was for throwing a party and I got to go home that night. Like they just fingerprinted me and I had to go to outpatient rehab and do community service. So I just don't know.
Must have been a serious party, Chelsea.
It was crazy. Well, they had like a task force where I lived where they were like cracking down parties and they were trying to like make an example out of me for everyone else. Kind of, yeah.
Jesus.
I don't know the full, so how did you end up getting your time from, so you went from 120 years to 2 months?
Well, so I did the 2 months. I had a bond, $80,000 bond. My dad bonded me out finally when he felt like it was right. I got out. I know I'm in there because of drugs. I had thought about it while I was in there. When I got sent up to the jail, I had this roommate, Sally, and she was in there for the same charges, but she only sold two Roxys.
And just she
had
two
one
pills?
Trafficking charge. I had four trafficking charges, okay? So I was like, fuck, dude, like... And she had been there for a year, you know, but no one had the money to bond her out. Like, I'm so grateful that, like, I had these resources, you know? So my dad bonded me out. I knew that, like, I'm going to be fucked. I can't fuck up. I can't do drugs, right? And my first day home, the whole time I was in there, I was thinking about the cigarette that I had at my dad's house. I knew I had one in a drawer somewhere. I couldn't stop thinking about it. And my friends found out I was home on, like, AOL or MySpace or something. And I had, like, bing, bing, bing on my window. And they're like, you're home. Like, what's up? Like, we brought an ounce blunt to smoke with you, like an ounce of weed in a blunt. And I'm like, yo, I can't smoke an ounce blunt, y'all. Like, I'm fucked right now. Yeah. Like, I can't save me the roach.
But the roach you're probably getting tested, like, too, right, on your probation.
For sure. I figured I would be. I'm on house arrest, right? Like, they were super strict. My dad couldn't even drive me home. I got driven home with the ankle monitor by a police officer. I smoked weed my first day home. I can't fucking help myself. Okay.
Yeah.
And like things like that made it when I went to treatment and made it easy for me to see like, oh my God, you like, there's an issue here, right? Mm-hmm. You smoke weed your first day out. I go, wow, that was dumb. I start drinking every day at 7 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. 2 weeks tops later, I'm selling drugs again out of my window.
Mm-hmm. Then Did you know that you were an alcoholic?
No.
Yeah.
No, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I had no clue. I thought I liked to party. Mm-hmm. I like to have fun. I like to party. That's my thing, you know?
Yeah. When I was 16, when I went to that outpatient rehab and like I met with the counselor and I kind of just told him about my using, he's like, oh, you're an alcoholic. And I'm like, no, I'm not. I'm like, I just like to party. Like for so long, like I didn't go into AA until I was 26. Mm-hmm. But up until then I was like, oh, I just have like a partying problem. Like I truly did not think that like it was bigger than that. Cause I think the thing that confused me, and I know a lot of other people too, is like, if everyone around you is partying, like we're all doing it. Like, why am I the one? But like, it affects everyone differently. Like I was the one who like never went to school and like my other friends who I partied with could, or like it was always I was always the last one up. Like, you know, it was always like affecting me in like different ways than other people. But I think it's like, yeah, the comparing yourself to like where other people, I think is where it gets confusing. Cause everyone can say, I'm not as bad as that person or like any of that.
Yeah. And I think I was doing that too. And I really genuinely like enjoyed partying. Like I really liked that kind of lifestyle. But I had this book. I had like this little like calendar book, like super small. And I used to write like what drugs I did every day in it. Like I had like a little drug calendar and I didn't know there was a little issue because I had like overdosed on Soma as a muscle relaxer one day. And I was like, whoa, like I gotta like chill the fuck out. And I like wrote it down, like chill the fuck out, like only smoke pot. And I like made the same, we're only smoking pot. And I remember in my book, it only lasted 2 days. Mm-hmm. That's the longest I could go. And it, when that happened, I was like, huh, like I made a resolution to stop and I couldn't, right? Like that's what they tell us to do in a big book. You think you're fine, then go drink a beer and just have one and walk away, right? So I did that. It didn't work. But it took a lot, you know. H and I is who brought me to life. Mm. Like I told you, like my rehab center sucks. So basically I'm on house arrest. I finish it. I'm 10 times worse by the end of it. They sentence me youthful offender, which you're allowed to do if you're under the age of 21. I get the maximum sentence of probation, 6 years. If I violate, I go for 3. Okay. Like awesome. Perfect. I thought maybe I should start my 3 then. Like, cause I was convinced there would never be a fucking chance in hell that I at least wouldn't like smoke pot. Right. Mm-hmm. And then I was homeless for about a month and a half. And I finally got a bed at a rehab center. And they sucked, which I'll say all the time. It was the worst. But H and I came in almost every night. And I would be like, can you tell me again about like the obsession? Like, what does that mean? And this lady would like explain it to me every time she was there. I'm like, okay, so you're saying, and like, it took me a while, but eventually I was like, wow. And they all told me like this story about how they were like me and they did these things. And now look at them. Like they have a job and they have money and they have a cute boyfriend and they have like all the shit. And I was like, damn, like, huh, I should try it. Literally, that was it.
And just for the listeners, H&I stands for hospitals and institutions. Yes. So it's people who come and bring meetings to hospitals and facilities, institutions who might not have 12-step meetings.
Yeah. And they planted seeds that whole time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I love speaking on panels at, there's a place out here called Claire, which is like a low end, like kind of last step on the bus treatment facility for women. And I love speaking there because
that's
like,
awesome.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. It just feels good to do it. And like for the people who are perceptive to it and interested and curious, it feels like magical, you know?
Yeah. You make their day, you know, or you like open their, you make them open their eyes to something they never thought of, or they have like a real moment. We used to have a lot of state funded places here, but they've literally all closed. It's so sad. Cause that used to be one of my favorite things to do too, is like go see those ladies and like, you just get a smile. I get to tell them a funny story, make them laugh, like let them know that you're there for them. It's the best feeling, but yeah.
And like then they realize like, oh, you can have like what you said, just like making them laugh, like going and having like a fun share, and then being like, oh, like she's like put together and can have fun like sober. I didn't realize I didn't realize that was possible.
Yeah, me neither. I think that's the most important thing that people like figure out. Like the first time I laughed in recovery was when my friend Kelly, me and her were in rehab together. That's why we were so close. We got there the same day. And she fucking hit her head on my bunk bed. I hadn't laughed in a week, right? Like I had been there. I hadn't laughed in a long time, but I had been like super sober for a week. And I was just sitting there like, she hit her head and I like fucking died. Like I was like crying, laughing. I was like, and it felt so good and I'll never forget it. And I think having as much fun as I had in there, even though it was like super mischievous fun, it made it all like, wow, this is fun. You know, I don't have to be like some boring, like saint, like asshole who I hate. Cause I don't like those people. They've always driven me nuts.
Yeah.
And if I thought I had to be some sort of like perfect, whatever it is, I would have like left that day. Yeah.
So after the H&I meetings, like what did your path look like from there up until you working in recovery? Like how did that come into play?
So yeah, I was nervous. I wanted to get a sponsor, but I didn't want to super commit to doing the work. And one day I just like randomly asked this lady and she was like, yeah. And I was like, all right, I did it. And so I worked with her. When I had 9 months, I relapsed. I was living with the guy I met in rehab, and he wasn't doing so great. And I went out with Kelly, and I ended up drinking whatever. So I picked up a white, got a new sponsor. I was honest the next day, got a new sponsor, and worked my steps, got sponsees of my own, broke up with that boyfriend, moved into my own studio. I was 19 years old, and stayed single for 2 years, worked on myself. And I had some like interesting jobs. I did some sales. I worked for some like weird shady-ish companies, like some weird stuff, like people do in early recovery when you can't get a fucking job because you have 20 felonies, right? And then I was like, I think I'm gonna be, I talked to this guy one day. I was like, what do you do? And he was like, I'm a real estate agent. I was like, really? Cause you look like you're never doing anything, right? Like, you look like you're living the fucking life. Like you have a nice car. You're like never working. You know, you have, your house is nice. Like, what do you do? He's like, I do real estate. I'm like, I'm going to do real estate. So I got my real estate license, and it was like right when the market crashed, and it just wasn't the best time. And that's when I went to my sponsor and I was like, I think I want to start a business. You know, I think, she's like, what do you want to do? I was like, I would really like to have a magazine, like, first people in recovery, like, and she was like, okay, cool. And she like helped me come up with a business plan, you know, which was awesome. And I had just gotten her as a sponsor. My other one moved, and it was like, you know, my higher power put her in my life at that time for the perfect reason. Because at first I was like, this lady's never had a sponsee before. She has the same amount of time as me. Like, what the fuck? I don't want this lady. Because this like the other lady passed me on to her, right? And I was like, I don't want it. And of course I did it because I was like, I'm sure he has a plan for why this is happening, but I don't want to do it. And it was perfect. And so she helped me. And eventually I had to have faith that it was going to work. So I fucking dropped the real estate altogether. I couldn't do both and be super successful. I was going to be mediocre at both of them if I kept doing both. So dropped the real estate, went full into the magazine. First, you know, magazine came out and it was all about sober sex and relationships. I was like, I need to make it salacious, you know, so people read it. And I did that for years. And then I did the sober living house. I ended up selling that within a year because it was so like crazy. Everything was so crazy. I didn't really know the industry that much when it was just the magazine. I was like removed. I just wrote articles, sold ads, whatever. And yeah, now I'm kind of here. That wasn't too long ago. It feels long ago, but I don't think it was too long ago.
Yeah. And then when you said you were single and you did work on yourself, I'm just interested to know what you did, because like, yeah, I feel like it's helpful for girls to hear.
So helpful. It's the best thing I've ever done for myself. I can't believe I did it. I don't know if I'd be able to do it again. Right. Like that's how hard it kind of was.
Yeah.
But, you know, I like, so things weren't going so great with this guy. And I said a prayer one night. I said, God, just show me something so blatant that I can't deny it. Right. Like that he's fucking up. Show me something so blatant. Right. And the next fucking day, one of my best friends I grew up with, she was like, bitch, this motherfucker steals your car in the middle of the night. Cause they were working together. He steals your car. He did this. She was like, I'm going to rehab tomorrow. I'm sorry. I was getting high with them too, but I love you. And you got to know. Right. And I was like, holy shit. Like that was it. Right. Yeah. I had to listen to it now. So I was like, bro, get the fuck out of my life. I'm going to a meeting. Here's my phone. Cause he didn't even have a cell phone. I was like, find a ride, find a ride. I went to the meeting. I shared, I was like, if a guy comes up to me, I'm going to fucking lose it. Right. Like, please. And this guy came up to me after the meeting. He was like, don't do it. Right. He goes, I have a girl who is like going through the same thing. I bet she would meet and hang out with you tonight if you wanted to get coffee. And I was like, yeah, I was like really in a lot of pain, you know? And so I met with this stranger, this girl, it's in AA, and she talked to me for a couple hours. She showed me things in the big book, you know, that she thought would help me at that time. And I hung out with, you know, friends that I watch a lot of Friends and Seinfeld, especially Seinfeld. I felt like it was never about love. It's never like, I love you. So it was like, I watched a ton of Seinfeld. And I finally grew my social network a little bit. And yeah, I never looked back. It was great decision. I started gardening. I got a job. I flirted with a bunch of people, but I didn't, you know, I knew I wanted to take some time to figure out what was going on. And I had all the freedom in the world and it felt so good.
Yeah. Yeah. It's taking that like time for yourself before getting back into a relationship that makes such a difference and allows you to attract in like someone who's so much better.
Yeah, because you're going to get what you are, right? Or like what you put out there.
Attract at the level you're at.
And you like the freedom to be able to do whatever you want, like is great to watch whatever you want, eat whatever you want at whatever time, wake up, don't clean, spend 20 hours scrubbing the floor. No one's going to be like, can you fucking watch this show with me, please? Like there's no one bitching about anything anywhere. Like you do everything you want to do. It's great. Mm-hmm. And then you're able to go, okay, this is what I'm looking for. And it's what I did. I wrote my perfect man. I had someone tell me to do that. Like, write a perfect man. Write
everything.
Write his dick size on there. Da da da. Right? Okay, fine. I wrote it out. And when I would talk to a guy, I'd go to my list and I'd go, okay, does he meet these things? And if he didn't, and I was getting rude to, do you have a job? Do you have a car? Do you have this? And no, never mind. I don't want to talk to you. Like, it was just that easy. Like, you're not fitting criteria here, guys, you know?
Yeah. And, I love that exercise. Yeah. And then a lot of people, you know, and then the second part is like, you have to be those things. You have to be those qualities.
Oh, I didn't know that part. No one told me that.
That's the second part. Yeah. So it's like, if you want someone who is like honest, like doesn't lie to you about
God,
their friends.
I've been missing
like,
the second part of this the whole time.
Yeah. Cause then it's like, then you're attracting at the level you're at and you're like being those same things. Yeah.
Of course, it makes perfect sense. Oh my God, I have to tell my sponsees that.
So what do you do today for your self-care? Like when you're super overwhelmed with like work and you need to take a time out, like what do you do to relax and find balance in your life?
Let's see. I've been like super into like upcycling recently. So I do a lot of garbage picking and I like take whatever it is, paint it, redo it. Massages are like my favorite thing to do. I clean like a maniac when I'm stressed out. But yeah, I mean, I take time every single day to just do whatever the fuck I want to do. You know, like don't look at the phone. I'm like pretty disconnected from social media. And I just like, if I want to look at this stupid gigantic tree that I love outside my house and I just sit there and fucking look at it, you know, and like take a moment to just appreciate everything I have. Like I own this condo and it might be like, it's mine, right? Like it, I don't care what anyone else thinks. Like I walk out and it's like mine. And I like look and I'm like, I'm so lucky. Like I live in beautiful South Florida. Like people would die to be here. Like whatever could be bad about my day, like this is the life, you know? And there's, I could go up a million times from where I'm at, but like, I'm so grateful to be here, be able to feel these feelings. I just started working out 2 months ago. I worked out every day for 2 months.
Wow.
I'm super proud of,
That's amazing.
I know. I never thought it would happen. And it's because my friends work out and they say you hang out with 4 successful people, you become the 5th.
Yeah.
Right. Like I hang out with a bunch of people that are like healthy and now like I'm becoming healthy.
Totally.
Yeah. So that's basically it. I'm trying to listen to myself. Yeah.
Yeah.
What my body, you know?
Yeah. Listening to your body. I know that's important when I'm like, okay, that food makes me feel like shit. Stop eating it.
Right. And then you eat it.
Yeah, totally. Every time. Then I'm like, why do I keep doing this? Like, it's exactly like when I wake up hungover from Coke. I'm like, stop eating that. But I can't stop eating macaroni and cheese. Anything else? Like any sort of like lessons or wisdom or anything you want to share to kind of wrap up if anything comes to mind?
I would say wherever you go, plant seeds. You know, I think that it, let go of the outcome of other people. The only thing you can control is yourself, and enjoy this beautiful gift that you've gotten, you know, and build your resilience. That is my biggest tip for everyone. Build your resilience, let go of outcomes, and enjoy this, because I don't know if we get to do it twice. We might, maybe as like a cat or a mouse. I'm not really sure how second lives work, but it goes by fast. So enjoy it.
Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Chelsea. It was so fun. I really enjoyed it. I've like always done all these podcasts with guys. I'm like, oh, she's going to be the first girl I get to like do a podcast with. I'm so excited. And I listened to you like for like 2 days. I'm like, these are so fun. I love your podcast now. I'm like, subscribe. Like, these are amazing.
Thank you.
You do a great job. So
thank you. I appreciate that. I hope you
keep killing it, because we need more awesome, funny, like women like you out there. Like,
thank you.
It's really awesome.
And then shout out your social media and where we can watch the doc and the series.
Okay, so social media is Instagram at Allie Severino _, and everything else is Allie Severino, AlliSeverino. American Relapse, I think they took it down from Hulu, but it's on
Amazon.
It's on Amazon. It's on Vudu. Thank you, Chelsea. And I think iTunes, and then Dope Sick Nation, I think, is on YouTube, iTunes, and Vice.
Awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me.